There was a lot of things
growing in coffee cans on the windowsill.
We just had a lot of like buttons and coffee cans and nails.
Coffee cans were like a major industry.
Folgers
must have made a mint.
They were beautiful.
They're like, our coffee
and they
is
always kind of still smelled like coffee for a long time.
Our coffee is kind of shit, but you can use these cans forever.
And they're striking because they're red. Hi, and welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where I come up with an idea, I do some research, I grab a bottle of wine, I bring everything to Mark, and he pontificates. Today's episode is going to be weird and a bit discombobulated while Mark and I discuss growing up feral in the 70s and 80s. We will be talking about things like latchkey living, toys that could kill you, strange adulting behavior, sex education, and the woods. Along the way, we'll reference some of the movies that capture the Gen X teen and young adult experience, who our role models were, and why we are considered one of the most ignored and subsequently cynical and savage generations of all time. We know that you'll be laughing along with us as we remind you of the fact that you never were properly restrained while riding in cars, even when you were a baby, but you're Gen X. You got your sensitivity chips late in life, and you're pretty sure you'll feel like a sellout if you use them. Hi, Mark Snedeker.
Buonasera, bellissima.
Oh my God, we have had an Italian meal tonight. It's very good.
Yes.
We've got Italian style desserts coming up.
See.
Okay, Mark, guess what? I'm going to do the hot take.
Are you sure you're qualified?
I am, and here's why. Because this episode almost fits into the accidental 80s arc.
Oh, wow.
Because of something that happened in 1969 in California.
No, my sister was born in Texas.
Oh, that's a sick burn against Leah. Leah, I'm expecting retaliation.
All right.
Okay, so Ronald Reagan signed into law a bill that allowed for no-fault divorce in California in 1969. Many people suspect that one of the reasons that
was getting divorced.
No, it's because he had been divorced by Jane Wyman, and Jane Wyman had to give some reason, right? Because you had to have
a
fault.
Said, small peepee.
Mental cruelty.
Woo! All right. He's like, well, that's enough of that. Next time I get divorced, it's going to be no fault.
It's a no fault. So then he signed that into law in California, and multiple states followed suit. But do you know when the first modern no-fault divorce law was enacted?
1234.
No, it was in 1917. Guess where?
Who liked to get divorced? Those Pennsylvanians.
No.
Philadelphia.
No, in Russia.
Oh, duh.
December 1917, following the October Revolution in the same year, they regarded marriage as a bourgeois institution.
Well, I mean, where's the lie?
They're actually not wrong.
It's a bourgeois institution.
They took the power out of the hands of the church because, of course, the church religion is the opiate of the masses.
That's right. They're like, I understand you want to cut her loose because you got a side piece, but we're going to need a little donation to make that happen.
So they put it into the jurisdiction of the courts?
Nastrovia, my Russian friends.
Wow. All right. This is going to be really conversational, everyone. I have a structure.
Ish.
It's going to just be really much more conversational with Mark.
Okay, telling you how my parents are trying to kill me through my formative years?
We've done a lot of Twitter kind of interaction with people. Right. And
we don't call it research.
No, it's just interaction with people to sort of get a temperature.
Right.
Let's talk about that latchkey life, Mark. Gen X. We used to be called the latchkey generation.
You did.
We also used to be called the slacker generation.
Well, where's the lie?
The baby bust. So Gen X, as we've talked about in previous episodes, spans the time 1965 to 1980. Do you know what generation you actually belong to?
Me personally?
You personally, because you were born in 1964.
So now I'm going to get kicked off the podcast.
Born at the tail end of.
Yeah, it depends on who you listen to. It's either tail end of boomers or the very,
very, very
nascent Gen X.
Gen X,
right?
Nascent. Okay.
So am I a Zoomer?
No, you are called Generation Jones because you're.
What does that mean?
No, you guys are the ones who are keeping up with the Joneses.
Oh, okay.
Also jonesing.
There's this jonesing quality to this generation. For viewers that don't know what jonesing is, it's that that craving or yearning. We were influenced more as children in the 60s and teens in the 70s. And so like with that jonesing quality, which I think is one of the fundamental qualities, personality characteristics of this generation, given huge expectations in the 60s, really during the arguably the height of post-World War II American confidence, and then confronted with a dramatically different reality in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And I think it left our generation, it's not just theoretical, and there's a great deal of statistical data to support this, left our generation with an underlying pending unrequited jonesing.
So then I also found out that the late X, so the people who were born towards the
rubber?
80s, the late X.
Isn't that just rubber?
They are actually sometimes called, and if I was from that portion, in fact, maybe within the next couple of years,
you're just going to claim it?
I'll just claim this. Yeah. They are called Generation Catalano.
Oh, because of Jordan.
Because of Jordan Catalano.
So the show was My So-Called Life with Claire Danes.
Yes.
And Jordan Catalano was the Jake...
Jake Ryan
Jake
of that
Ryan
generation.
Of that show.
That little cohort.
Dumb as a stick.
Oh, But Jordan
Catalano.
I mean,
look, Jared Leto is a good-looking guy.
Oh, and he is.
He
and
is
then
weird
then he
as fuck.
Oh, he has a cult.
Oh, I'm sure he does.
I'm sure he does.
Like, I've seen things recently where, like, I used to like 30 Seconds to Mars, but Jared Leto's kind of freaking me out now.
So, he's a fantastic actor.
Oh, he's a great actor.
Not a great Joker, but otherwise right, I've really appreciated his work. Yeah. All right, so the parents of Gen X were either late silent generation.
Silent generation is 28 to 45.
28 to 45, okay.
So my parents... Definitely right in there, silent generation, because they were both born in 38.
Okay, so my mom, 33, was born. Isn't that weird? My mother was older than your mom, but you're older than me.
Christina's dad is significantly older
than my mom. My dad was...
born in like 1903.
He was almost lost generation.
Yeah, he's like 1918?
He's 1914. My dad was 1914. So my dad was... Greatest generation. All right, so Gen X children were the first generation to deal with extreme changes in the way that the family worked.
Yes.
Okay, so this is described as a time frame in which the focus had shifted from a 1950s cult of the child. And that's fair to say, because in the 50s is really when you start to see the rise. I mean, I think maybe a little bit earlier.
Youth culture.
But like the teenager.
There have always been teenagers, but we've never, up to this point, the culture had never really separated teenagers out as their own sort of separate entity in the culture. So kind of the way it worked is you went to school until you graduated from high school, and then when you moved on to college or into a career or something like that, you put childish things away and became an adult. There wasn't really a transition period that was celebrated in a particular kind of way. And there weren't goods and services and products and those kinds of things that were devoted to teenagers. But what starts to happen during this period is that parents start to develop maybe a greater sort of care. Well, maybe it's not fair to say care, because that makes it seem like the parents before then weren't caring as much about their kids, but they start to really focus more on the children. Maybe that's because coming out of the Second World War, a lot of these people, the fathers had been away at war. People come back. War had been a tough time. Now the war was over. They wanted to get back to as normal a kind of life as they could. And they really focused on doing what they thought was best for their kids. And so these kids were a little bit more pampered maybe than earlier generations were. There was a lot more focus put on their educations and their general sort of emotional health and this kind of thing. And what that generated was a bunch of kids who had their own, had their own clothes, their own language, their own cars, their own ideas of what teen romance was, lots of leisure time and disposable income.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that didn't even exist as an idea before that. It's
right.
Like, by teenager, do you mean farm worker?
Yeah.
Because we have those.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's a shift from the 1950s cult of the child to a focus on the cult of the adult.
Yes.
And self-actualization.
And the invention of the martini, I will bet you dollars to donuts. Those guys did not miss cocktail hour.
No.
I'm telling you that right now.
No one missed a cocktail hour.
I'm very anti-time travel, right? Mm-hmm. Because of the air conditioning, right? But I might go back because they had drinks. I mean, those guys would party. My parents were pretty straight, but Dad would have at least one martini every day after he got home. That was a party generation.
It really was. Okay. And they were paying attention to themselves, right? The cult of the adult. Now, I really feel like that. I mean, I did not have a typical, like a typical Gen X childhood. In some ways I did. And in some ways, definitely not for a multitude of reasons. Yeah. So, you know, this isn't going to be just about us. It's not going to be our childhood, but
are
I will
you sure?
Say,
because
no.
People are fascinated with me.
No.
We could just do my biography.
All right. No,
I was
Mark.
Born.
No. Rising divorce rate. So we talked about Reagan and him in 1969 right. putting this bill into action. Well, by the time Gen X families got in full swing, they were getting divorced like crazy.
Between the early 60s and the early 70s, the divorce rate doubled, so that by the end of that time, about one out of every two marriages was going to end in divorce. There were dramatic changes in the way people were acting and the way they were thinking about marriage and divorce during the 60s. For example, many, many more women were at work, which gave them an independent source of income, which meant that if a marriage wasn't going well, they'd be more likely to leave, or their husbands might feel less guilty about leaving them. People were more economically independent of each other by the end of the 60s than in the beginning, and that economic independence meant that there was less glue holding marriages together. In addition, people were more concerned about their own lives, about their own self-worth, than they were about holding marriages together. In general, people in the 60s, by the end of the decade, were more concerned about their own individual advancement. And I think that contributed to a situation where people weren't likely to keep a marriage together if it wasn't going well, as much as, say, their parents might have done.
Now, did you know kids from a divorced family?
I knew several, but
I only
most...
knew like maybe one or two.
No, I knew several.
Yeah.
And my own mother and father had been each divorced before.
Right. Yeah, so you lived that life.
So I lived that life, but I knew several kids in school whose parents were divorced.
Yeah.
But, you know, they always made it sound like so drastic. Like,
oh,
there were
yeah.
So many divorces.
She's divorced.
So many divorces. And then you're right. There weren't as many as you...
I mean, like, now you're like, your parents never got divorced? What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, right.
But back then, that was kind of a pretty unusual thing.
It was an unusual
thing. Not for me personally.
But more...
For me, it's kind of like a hobby.
Getting divorced.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's so good. So in 70s and the like late 60s into the 70s, it's going up and then peaks in the 80s. And, you know, that's when we were hearing statistics like 50% of all marriages end in divorce.
Right.
Well, it's trending down now, but less people also are getting married.
They're like, well, we know we're going to get divorced. Why
would we bother to do this?
So I didn't really go through that at all. Obviously, my parents were... They used to make this joke. They're like, the reason we stay together is that whoever asks for the divorce has to take the kids. And we have five kids, so that's a pretty serious threat.
All right. Well, so this is interesting because joint custody actually in that day and age during Gen X fundamental years was not common.
No.
It was very
Kramer versus
uncommon.
Kramer had not happened yet.
And well, we're going to talk about this.
Yeah.
So often when there was a divorce, people would spend much less time with one parent than the other, and typically
sure.
It was the father, right? So
yeah.
Typically the father did not get
got
the
weekends
custody.
And vacations in the summer.
Maybe.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah.
So a lot of
every
times,
other weekend and, you know, like maybe 2 weeks in the summer or whatever.
Right, right. So
which by the way is terrible for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, unless your dad was a total shithole, why not? You know, you should be spending time with both of them. But that's just not how they did it back then. The default position was the mom got the kids,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, that's just how it went.
So let's talk a little bit about Kramer versus Kramer, because that was a big deal movie. When
it definitely
that
was.
That was a
cultural
really...
like marker. They brought on some pretty good actors.
Dustin Hoffman and Meryl Streep.
I mean,
how
they're
can you
fairly,
go?
They're fairly, you know, well known. Whatever, people like them.
But that was an early film
now,
for her.
Did the kid who played the kid?
I think Justin Henry is.
Did
his
he
name.
Ever do anything? After
yes,
that?
After that, he was in 16 Candles. He played the younger brother.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
But that movie was an intense exploration of what divorce could be like.
Yeah.
But it kind of turned it on its head because the mother walked out.
Yeah.
And the father was trying to keep his career together.
Yep.
And then raise his son.
Yeah.
And then the mother comes back and like, says,
give me my boy.
Give me my boy. And they go through the whole core process.
Yeah.
And she's awarded custody.
I know. That's a fucked up ending.
Even though he had been, you know, a great father in her absence.
In the book, does he end up with her? I mean, is this like the natural?
In the end of the movie, he ends up having him.
She's just doesn't have her shit together.
No, she doesn't.
Thing.
Right. But, you know, okay. So she was saying things in that movie that I think a lot of women probably could identify with, which was, I'm lost in this marriage.
Yeah,
I don't know who I am. I don't know what's going on. And this is a time when feminism is definitely on the rise.
And they're telling you like, hey, if you want to work,
you should
work.
Be able to work.
Right.
But she's not able to. And I think that she felt like she was giving up some of what she had going for her in order to become a mother and a wife.
Look, legitimate complaint. Kids are a pain in the ass. They're not that smart. You know, they don't earn any money. You know, I get
what
it.
I get it.
Thank God mine finally got off the payroll. Wow. That's all I have to say.
All right. So were you a kid who was afraid that your parents were going to get divorced?
No, never. Because I told you, they basically said whoever asked for the divorce has to take the kids. And we knew what a burden that would be. Let me tell you about just a brief snapshot of my family. First of all, we did have 5 kids. At one point, my mom was taking care of 4 kids under the age of 5. We knew that that was a serious threat, okay? But no, I was never really afraid of that at all.
I definitely lived for a long stretch of my childhood a more 1950s style or even earlier, because not only did my mom not work, my grandmother was living with us.
Wow. So you guys were like a hunter-gatherer society.
We really were, kind of. And then,
Christina, can you go out and fetch water from the stream?
Yes, it was. It was a little bit, but there was a lot of fighting, but also there was a lot of sickness in my family. So not only was I constantly worried that they might divorce because they were fighting all the time, my dad very clearly was really on his last leg. Yeah. And I know that that sounds like I'm being flip about this.
No, but I mean, he was old.
But he was old.
Yeah.
He was 20 years older than my mom. So he had had, you know, multiple heart attacks by the time I was, I think, 4. So I had a kind of an unstable childhood from that respect.
Yeah.
But no one divorced. No. Someone just died when I was 14, which was my dad.
Which is, you know, brutal, obviously.
Right. But put me in that situation where at 14, I became a latchkey kid.
Yeah, you were
from before
flying solo.
I wasn't. Then I was alone because my mother had to go to work.
Right.
This is the moment where women who are saying, hey, I've been educated and now I'm sitting in a home and I'm not doing anything.
Yeah, no,
I'm not using my education at all.
I'm ironing my apron.
So this is a time when women are going out into the workplace. And there's also a lot of poor childcare options.
If you need to get a babysitter, I mean, you better hope you have some kind of like slacker teenager nearby, because there's like daycare is not a thing.
No, it's really rough.
You're just holding on until kindergarten.
So this is where then the latchkey phenomena comes in. Parents are going off to work, both mom and dad. The kids are home alone.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the home alone after school experiences that we've heard about. Once I was 14, I was coming home alone all the time. I was spending all my time alone. MTV was a big part of my babysitter.
Which is a pretty good babysitter if you think about it. Nee, 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 bang, 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 bang.
Okay.
Hey, Mark Goodman here. Hi, Christina. How's it going? Did you make sure to lock the door? Okay, great.
Mostly, I was just, like, I would go home, I would make myself a snack, I would watch some TV, or I would be with my friends, or I would be at after school things. Like, I was in drama club.
I'm sure I have zero doubt about that. What was your go-to snack? Like, were you, like, hooking up some Chef Boyardee?
No.
Are you just eating some Twinkies? What are you doing?
No, it would have been more like
a sandwich?
No, I would have done something like pickles. I would have had some pickles.
Gross. You are a strange child.
But I also, when I was first learning how to cook, one of the first things I learned how to cook, because you had to cook, right?
Yeah, like, see,
you
had like to, I didn't like, learn how to cook until I college.
Right. No, I learned how to cook rice.
Yeah.
And I would make all these rice dishes. Like, and then
we're going to have rice with Cheetos today. And tomorrow is rice with pudding.
Or like toast. I'd do toast. Or yeah. I'd do a toasted, like I'd do toast.
Now, I assume that since your dad was British, you'd been eating, you know, beans and toast for...
Well, we did, but Welsh rarebits.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Love that. So that was what I would have. But
do you want to know how snacks work in a 5-kid household?
Whoever gets it first.
Oh, my God. It was mercenary. I beat a lot of ass for snacks. I'm not going to lie. But every once in a while, they would bring home, like, Twinkies. And everybody would go and grab their 2 Twinkies that was allotted to them. Because if you didn't, you would never see those Twinkies. Somebody would sit down and eat like 5 Twinkies in a row just to be able to own those Twinkies.
It's savage as fuck.
It was primitive warfare.
All right. So let's see what some of our Twitter respondents said to the question, were you a latchkey kid and what memories do you have? I know that someone said that they were a latchkey kid and they and their brother would get home and then she would lock her brother out of the house.
So she was a tail end boomer, 63. Yeah. So like my age. Yeah. Right.
Generation Jones.
Maria. Is that what we're doing now?
Generation Jones, yeah. Right,
well, now I'm Generation Jones, and I have to own that. Yeah, she's like, my brother and I fighting. I was older, bigger, but he was smaller and faster. I locked him out. So she's like, all right, fine. I'm throwing you out the door. Lock the key. Doesn't matter how fast you are, you're not getting in.
Now, I love it. It's savage as fuck. It's super Gen X-ish, right?
Absolutely.
Like, that's so hardcore.
So my siblings and I conducted guerrilla warfare for most of our young lives, right? We were constantly battling. Now, obviously, as the oldest, I was beating ass, right? I'm like beating you up. So Tom, who's only 15 months younger than me, obviously was first assaulted while he was still in his playpen.
Yes, we know that story.
I crawled into his playpen and bit him on the soft spot. Okay. So John, who was 4 years younger than me, right? He was born in 68. We had just been told that my mom was now pregnant again with our fifth sibling. And so Tom and I thought it would be funny if we took John into the bedroom. So I got out my Cub Scout knife. And we pinned John down.
This
and we're
is
like,
so
this is awful. This is the worst thing probably I've ever done in my whole life. And we're like, John, mom and dad talk to us. And since we have another baby coming, we can't really afford you. We can't really afford to feed you. So they said we had to kill you.
It's so disgusting.
So I snap open my knife and he's like, no, I promise I'll eat less. Like he was going to go on some kind of hunger, some kind of fast in order to justify his existence.
Oh my God.
And we're like,
poor John.
And
everyone,
this,
if you would know John,
he's the sweetest.
Sweet.
But I had like this Nerf basketball because we had this, like, you know, the Nerf hoop on the door that, you know, scrapes all the paint off the door.
What did you tell him? Put this in your
mouth.
And
I went,
and
I like stabbed the Nerf ball.
Oh my God.
I was menacing. And I was like, we're going to have to kill you. And he's like, no, no. I'm like, all right, we're going to let you go for now. But, you know, like you do the, like, 2 fingers at your eyeball, 2 fingers at him type of thing. You know, it's like, I'm watching you. So just, you know, mind your P's and Q's, sir, because you could be assassinated at any second. And Tom, I don't think really knew what was going on, but he was there with me because, you know, I'm the big brother.
He lent some gravitas. Yeah.
He's like my henchman, right?
All right. Wow. All right.
But so how horrible is that?
That's terrible. All right. Read some others.
So Sandy was not. But she was fascinated by the kids that were, and I bet you dollars to donuts that some kids who came home to their mom, who hugged them, asked them about their day, made them a snack, were a little bit jealous of the kids who could just like stroll in, nobody watching them. Oh, whatever. I'm going to watch Tom and Jerry. Mm-hmm. Bap, you know, that's what I'm doing right now. Space Ghost is on. Fine. Watching. So one of our listeners said, once I returned home alone, and I noticed things were off. Now, that's a weird feeling when you come home. And
something
like,
is weird.
Yeah. So my dad lunched at home and went back to work. I called my mom and asked if he was mad about something because everything was a mess. She screamed, told me to get out and call. She called the police.
Well, right? No, but that's real. When I was 16, my house was broken into.
Oh, really?
And I was home, and I was sleeping on the couch, and I thought it was a friend popping over, and they were.
Do
ringing,
you have friends that pop over ring, like that?
They were ringing the front door, and I was laying on the couch, and I'm like, no, I'm not. And I thought it was my friend John, and I'm like,
fuck John. You know
no,
what?
I'm he not. Wasn't,
you weren't that
the
into
door.
Him. Yeah.
And then, and I thought, I'm just going to sleep. Because I would, yeah. Usually a lot of times I'd take a
just
nap.
Just nappy nap.
Right.
Yeah.
And so then I went, all of a sudden I heard knocking on the back door and I'm like, John, calm down.
Wow,
right? Like,
John,
I was like,
you
God.
Are thirsty, motherfucker.
And so then I was walking through the house and I went, as I'm walking towards there, I hear glass breaking and it wow. was our back door window. And I'm like, what the hell?
Holy shit.
And all of a
terrifying.
Sudden they reached in and they unlocked the deadbolt.
Yeah. Now, did you then drop into a karate stance?
No, I walked. I was just, I had no idea what to even yeah. do. And they walked into the house. I saw two boys
burglars.
Walk into the house. Burglars walk in. And it was, you know, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock.
Did they have
in the
black
afternoon.
Turtlenecks and the knit cap on?
No. And they said, and I looked at them and I said, what the hell? And
well,
they
nice.
Turned around and walked
yeah.
out.
Good job, Christina.
I know. They ran out of the house.
You're like, you know
like,
what? I think if I use some swears here, they're going to run away.
I know. You know, they were teenagers and it was yeah. Christmas. It was around Christmas.
So they're looking,
so they're
to, the,
looking
to rob the
presents,
Christmas tree.
Right.
They're Grinching.
Yeah,
is what
they
doing.
Really were
well,
Grinching.
That's what we called it when we were kids. Grinching.
Grinching. That's not what you call. What are you
no,
talking about?
No, I just made that up. So one of our listeners is latchkey kid from 8, babysitting siblings at 11.
At 11, yeah. I was 10.
You were apparently, yeah, qualified to babysit mm-hmm. as soon as you hit double digits.
I was babysitting for neighborhood kids at 10.
Yeah, and I was too. Salty girl, 18.
Uh-huh.
Had to go straight home after school and call my mom as soon as I got home. Uh-huh. I couldn't have friends over, answer the door, or cook. Now, that's good advice because kids
like, that's
will
a mom.
Burn the house down.
Yeah.
Because they are terrible cooks.
Except like me, who well, learned how to cook when I was really young and did breakfasts and stuff like that. Like I did eggs and stuff, then like cooking lunch and dinner foods, you know, like I knew how to make a sandwich, but rice was my first thing. But I right. knew how to make scrambled eggs see, since I was six.
I didn't cook anything until college, I think. And then she said, I would listen to record albums. Nice.
Nice.
Hipster.
Yeah,
all right.
I like
vinyl
it.
For life. Mm-hmm. And do homework or get real or watch TV. Yeah, that's what she did. But she would, and then her mom would call ever so often to make sure she didn't leave. Now, her mom sounds like she's on top of
she's
her game.
She's on it, yeah.
Yeah. She's like, you know what? Don't do any of the things that dumb kids do. And call me every once in a while to make sure you're still alive. So this Amber
yep.
said, for sure.
All
she's
right.
She's obviously from the Valley. My sister and I walked to school alone and home every day. It was a long walk down a very busy road. And we're home alone in the summer from the time I was 8 or 9. She's 3 years younger. I was born in 81. Ugh. She's a little baby.
Boy, she's barely Gen X. She's
barely. She said,
she's
generation
that
makes
Catalano.
Me, she said that makes me an Xennial.
Yeah, she's no. You're a girl. Yeah. Now, here's a news flash. You're generation Catalano.
You are Gen Catalano.
Who is that salty girl?
Amber.
Amber, okay.
And then my sister and I fought like crazy. Good, right? Not allowed to open the door or answer the phone. I wasn't allowed to cook either, so sandwiches for lunch every day. This is in the summer, right?
Yeah.
When they're not in school. Roxanne. Oh, geez. Here we go. We're going to get a little dark here.
All
not
right.
Not a good memory. But it was pouring rain after school, and I called my dad, who worked nights and slept during the day, to pick me up. We walked to school back then. He said he wouldn't pick me up as he was watching a movie. What year is this where you can watch movies on TV?
Maybe cable had come about.
Yeah. Happened many times when it was snowing too.
Oh,
so I mean that's hardcore, and you know we're sympathetic.
I had that though too. I remember my mom would like there would be times I'd be waiting for her to come pick me up, and clearly like her meeting would have run over. She was in real estate, and I had drama club practice out, you know, like or swimming depending on what season it was, and I would have to wait, and then I'd wait and wait, and I'd see she wasn't coming, and we'd be starting to get dusk, and I'd be like, well, I better start walking home. And I'd walk home. And it was like, I don't know, 3 miles
home.
I
never had to walk home.
Mark,
today.
You pretty much had the ideal childhood.
I really did. Right now, I have nothing to complain about.
Poor John had a bad one.
Oh, yeah, because he was almost murdered. But, so here's one. I remember telling my daughter that I used to walk 4 miles to school in the rain and snow. And she would not believe me until she drove it, lazy. And then she said, oh, my God, Mom, you did walk 4 miles to school. Yeah, no shit. Uphill both ways, girl.
Yeah, no, but that's real true. I can remember being in elementary school and walking home alone. So that is definitely a thing.
Latchkey kids were not allowed to cook, even though I bet they did. Not allowed to answer the phone. Bet they did that too. Don't answer the door. Probably did a little bit of that. But yeah, they had like real strict rules.
When you're home alone, right? When you're home alone, there were rules. When you had parents at home, they were just like, well, we're home.
Why are you here? Go out
get
on the street.
Get out of the house and go play.
Go do something.
Play. And you would say, and the way you would do it was somebody would come to your door and say, can Christina play? Well, the band is saying, Chris, play.
Yeah.
Like many Gen Xers, my rule of thumb for me was come home when the streetlights come on.
I'm not 100% sure because I definitely remember going outside and murdering a bunch of June bugs.
Well, you can play at night.
Yeah, but you have to check in.
Right. But during
your meatloaf dried up meat bullshit you're eating at that point. It's like, oh, look at this. Low quality meat and starch. What a shock. So you eat that and then you go outside, right?
You would go outside and you would play some more and then you had to always spray yourself with Off and DEET.
Not in Germany, you didn't.
Well, in Wisconsin, you did. And
yeah, because you guys had mosquitoes the size of moose.
And then you had to go outside and you could play, but you had to stay close and you had to check in. You had to always be within shouting distance at nighttime. That's right. You could. You have to be able to hear me if I call.
Now, in Wisconsin, would they actually yodel to bring you home? Is that correct? Or do they ring a cowbell?
No, that was Minnesota. Minnesota was yodeling.
And like clang, clang, more cowbell. Yeah, that's right. And the kids come home.
So I can remember playing out at night. Now, it depended if we went to our lake house. I was able to roam free at night.
Wow.
Really,
that
really
is a thing about the Great Lakes people. Everybody always had, no matter what your economic strata was, you had some kind of lake
cottage
getaway.
Or lake.
Yeah. And they always call it the cottage or the whatever.
Except here's one thing. Okay, so we're going to talk about parenting tactics. Yeah. This is a good segue. My mom used to do this weird fucking thing because I love the water.
Yeah.
And I would go swimming.
So she lived in fear of you drowning.
She was afraid that I would go running into the water because I had no fear of the water. I felt like I could swim really well and I could, but also I was a child.
Yeah.
So my mother would tell me.
So your endurance was suspect.
Right. And if I got a cramp or cold or whatever,
Everybody lived in fear of cramps
after
the 70s.
Don't eat.
I feel like the leading cause of death in the 70s was cramps. Cramp was lunch, right?
It was. If you eat lunch, you had to sit at least
like
half an hour.
Yeah. Oh, no, we were an hour. Oh, we were a full hour.
Like a half hour
well,
after.
Well, that's because you were slackers and it was the 80s.
Yeah, so
they loosened the restrictions somewhat.
But my mother would tell me that at our lake, I couldn't go swimming until they put the buoys in because if I went in, the alligators would get me.
In Wisconsin.
But as soon as the buoys went in, no alligators could get me.
Yeah, those are alligator-proof buoys.
But
we need some of those here.
But this is my mother telling me lies.
There's no alligators in Wisconsin.
I know that.
I know you're into the research. I feel like you would have been like, you know what? I'm just going to look at the Encyclopedia Britannica for a second. Alligators. Southern United. Okay, I don't think there's any alligators there.
My mom had me believing that.
Maybe
shit.
A pike.
I was like 5 years old. To 8 years old, and I believe that
they
right?
lie. Well, and I think
parents
that's an interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting point about parenting in that era, where most of what they told you was total bullshit.
Well, let's talk
they
about.
They lied.
That.
They lied to you on the regular.
They did. So one of the things that we actually put us onto this topic was the idea of the way back in the car.
Yeah.
In station wagon.
So. My family, and I posted this on my Twitter, Marked Speech, check it out. We had what I learned is now a 1975 Chevy Impala metallic orange 9-passenger station wagon. This is a big fucking boat, okay? So you have three rows of seats plus...
With no seatbelts.
Yeah, that's
or
right.
Or if you did, it was a lap belt.
Oh, no. If you had seatbelts, but every time you moved the seat up, they got buried underneath the seat, so nobody had seen them for like 5 years. three seats plus...
The way back.
Everybody had if you had the station wagon, you had the way back.
The way back. And the way back was really the fun place to sit.
That's where you wanted to be, right? And that's where the most danger is.
And you could, because it had the door in the back where you could just get into the way back.
Yeah. And then
the tailgate would open up and you could get in.
Our car was so luxurious that you could electrically lower that window, right? If you turn the key, not to the right, but to the left, it would lower the glass window, and we would beg my dad to open that window.
He's like, the way back.
You'll die of carbon monoxide poisoning. Apparently, in addition to quicksand, which every TV show told
TV
you
show
would
told
die
you
of.
You would die of quicksand.
Or cramps, right? You've swum too far out. You're 100 yards from shore. Your lunch is kicking in. That salami sandwich is now your enemy. And you just cramp up and you sink to the bottom. But also carbon monoxide
poisoning.
I feel like even though carbon monoxide, I'm sure, was discovered back in the 19th century.
Oh, we know that it was, remember.
Oh, that's right. Because everybody
died of gas.
Everybody in the early 20th century
died of gas.
They're like, another person died of gas. Well, that's because you have gas pipes piping gas into the room. And if the pilot light goes out, you're going to die. Like, they're just pumping gas into the methane into your room, like propane or whatever the fuck it is. You're going to die. But yeah, so carbon monoxide. So my dad would be like, nah, the exhaust will come in and it'll kill you. I'm like, are you sure? Because we're traveling at like 60 miles an hour. How's that smoke from the exhaust going to fight against the 60 mile an hour wind and coming into the back seat? But whatever,
it's even better in my house because I was an only.
Yeah, you
and
were
then,
an only.
And then we
I
had
wish
a,
I was an only.
We had a big Cadillac, as you might imagine.
Of course.
And I like to play
crushed velvet seats.
I like to
ride cruising down the streets.
It was like lime green was everything.
That's amazing.
We had multiple of them, actually. We always had Cadillacs. I mean, so.
Please, if you had those cars today, you could sell them for $1 billion.
I know. Oh, my God. But anyway, we had, I was an only, and I loved to play in the back seat.
Yeah.
Because you weren't strapped in.
No, you had an acre of land back there to work with.
I could stretch out today in the back seat.
You're like, whatever.
And I'm 5'8".
This is bigger than my bedroom.
It really is. But I really like to set up my Barbies, and I would always, I had all the toys.
Oh, I'm sure you had, the full...
Especially if we were on a long road trip, because we did, every spring, we did 2 weeks in Florida. And so
were basically, the backseat was a Barbie diorama.
It was everything. And so then, but I really like to lay in the bottom.
Did you have Barbie, and you would pretend like that hump in the middle was like a mountain or something?
No. But I would just bring, I'd have my baby dolls or my Barbies or whatever I would have, and I was playing, but I also like to get cozy. And the way to get cozy in that was to get into the floor of the thing.
Right. Where pillow. You had a pillow.
And I had my pillows. Oh,
and a blankie.
Pillows and blankies and sleeping bags and everything else. And I would get down into that, the bottom of the, on this, you would put your feet.
Yeah, and your knees would just go over the hump.
That lump.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my mom.
We call it the hump.
And my mom and dad would look back and they would say, you're going to die of carbon monoxide poisoning.
It's like, what are you guys doing? Are you piping CO into the back seat?
Get up onto the seat, Chris. You're going to die of carbon monoxide.
Is that where we keep it? We keep it on the floor of the back seat. Is that right?
I also was fascinated with the trunk. I don't know.
Really? You wanted to go in the did you have kidnap fantasies? What is wrong with you?
I don't know what was happening, but it was like, I was like, I'd like to get
cozy.
You
know what happens if you go in a trunk now? There's a glow-in-the-dark little plastic pull thing that you can unlock the trunk from the inside.
No kidding.
I'm not joking. If you look in a modern trunk, now you have an SUV, so you'll never see it. But if you look in a modern trunk, there's a little white plastic glow in the dark.
For kidnapping purposes.
Yeah, for kidnapping.
This is the best thing in the world.
I'm telling you. And so if you ever found yourself trapped in a trunk in a late model car and you just pull that little thing and the trunk pops open. So nobody can lock in the trunk.
That's amazing.
I agree.
All right. So let's
I think my parents were legit afraid not of carbon monoxide, but that we would jump out of a traffic light or something and go like do some kind of weird Chinese fire drill thing because we were idiots. I mean, there's no doubt
in
my mind.
Well, kids were idiots in those days.
No. My family, we were especially idiots.
Well, let's talk about more parenting tactics.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So one of the things that I always remember is that if I ever got sick when I was a kid,
yeah,
I would always be told, let me get the book.
Dr. Spock?
Dr. Spock's like,
your child is exhibiting these symptoms. Euthanasia is the best choice at this point.
No, it was always like calamine lotion.
Oh, yeah, calamine.
Or also like a rectal thermometer.
Yeah, they would stick a piece of glass in your asshole to determine whether you felt good or not. Guess what? Once you stick a piece of glass in my asshole, I don't feel good at all.
No, what the hell? All right. So Dr. Spock, though, in 1946, he published his book, The Common Sense Book of Baby and Child Care. And that from 1946
was the Bible.
Until
honestly, like early 80s.
Recently, actually 90s.
Was
when,
it?
What to expect when you're expecting came along.
I definitely have a copy of that somewhere.
But okay, by 1998, it had sold more than 50 million copies.
Dr. Spock.
And had been translated into 42 languages.
Hey, Dr. Spock, live long and prosper, bro.
According to the New York Times, Baby and Child Care was, throughout its first 52 years, the second best-selling book next to?
The Bible.
The Bible.
Yeah.
Literally. All right. So Spock advocated ideas about parenting that were at the time considered out of the mainstream.
Yeah, like, don't be a dick.
No, he sort
don't
of said...
Don't beat the shit out of your
his
kids.
His message was, you know more than you think you do.
Right.
Like,
go with
was
your
sort
instinct.
Of going, yeah, like, but previously, experts held that babies needed to learn to sleep on a regular schedule, that picking them up and holding them whenever they cried would only teach them to cry more
right.
and not sleep through the night. They were told to feed their children on a regular schedule, that they should not pick them up, kiss them, or hug them because that
Ever.
Would not prepare them to be
well,
strong.
Well, I agree with that. You definitely have to be mean to your kids.
That would not prepare them to be as strong and be strong and independent individuals in a harsh world. But in contrast...
Wow, what a shitty way to grow up,
in
right?
In contrast, Spock comes along in the 1940s.
He's like, hey, guess what, guys? They're little babies. Be nice to them.
He's like,
are you nice to puppies? Good. Be nice to babies, too.
Well, they weren't nice to puppies.
Well,
but encouraged
weren't.
The parents to show affection for their children and to see them as individuals. Spock was the first pediatrician to study psychoanalysis to try to understand children's needs and family dynamics.
It's like, if you want to know what's wrong with adults, stop beating the shit out of your kids.
Right. His ideas about child care influenced several generations of parents to be more flexible and affectionate.
My parents 100% had the Dr. Spock book.
Oh my God, I can remember the picture on the front. I mean, it was like a really worn volume.
Oh, yeah. She's like, oh my God, what is Chris up to now?
Yeah.
Let's see what Dr. Spock says. All right, Dr. Spock says I can't kick your ass, so...
No.
I mean, here's a hug, whatever.
All right, but let's see how true that was. So, discipline-wise.
So, I didn't
ask this question on social media because I thought that might not
be fair. I was spanked one time in my entire life that I can remember.
Okay.
And I was about 7, I think, and I did some fucking thing. I don't know what it was, but I guarantee you it was fucked up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my dad took me back to my bedroom. I don't think he said this is going to hurt you more than it's going to hurt me because he knew that was a lie. But he definitely whapped me like 3 or 4 times. And I was mad, right, that he dared to touch me. How dare you lay hands on the heir apparent, for one thing. And also, like, you know, I was just super, I mean, I knew how disappointed he was in me. And, of course, that's always the death knell.
Well, that's
right?
it. That's all you have to actually do
They're
is
like,
show
I'm
that you're
so disappointed.
Disappointed. Yeah, I was also told often this. I was struck as a child. And the animals.
Did you get, like, the backhand?
No.
Smack on the back of the head?
There were a couple of times where I got
booty smacks?
A proper hiding.
Yeah. Ooh. Did they like use a belt or something?
No. It was just a lot of hitting of my bottom. And yeah. I don't remember it as such. Like, I don't remember. I know it happened. I don't remember it being traumatizing.
Right.
It like, I'm not traumatized by that.
I might have plenty of other things I'm super working through right now, but that one was not one of it.
My dad used to say things to me like this threat. I'm sure a lot of people recognize this. You're crying? I'm going to give you something to cry about.
That's right.
Or he'd say, stop this, or I'm going to give you the hiding of your life.
That's right. You were never told, like, go select a switch.
No, my neighbors were, though.
Really?
And my parents used to frown on that. My parents would say, behind closed doors.
Because you're beating your child with a stick.
So disgusting.
It is disgusting.
So my dad would make a lot of empty threats, but the one time he did, and actually there were a couple of times. Once I was emotional.
I'm shocked. What? Are you sure you're talking about you?
I was emotional as a kid. And
were you dramatic? Yes, you were.
I was. And something happened at the dinner table, and I got upset about something. So I'm sitting at the kitchen table, and I stood up fast because I was upset about it.
Yeah. Did you storm out? I've never seen that before.
I was about to storm out, and what happened is I hit my head against our chandelier over the kitchen table.
Were you like 11 feet tall?
No, I was tall enough.
But you're a tall kid.
But I was tall, and the lamp was down low.
Down low.
And I broke, there was like a glass thing, and I broke it, and it shattered down over the table. And
you definitely got an ass beating for that.
This was before I was 12, so I had to have been about 10.
Probably 5'5" at that point.
Probably 10 to, I was 10 or 11, so I was probably about 5, yeah, probably 5'6". My mom was angry about me. My dad got really angry.
Yeah.
And I got a spanking.
He had invested in that.
Yeah, I got a spanking for that.
That was an accident.
It was an accident.
You didn't like headbutt the chandelier.
I didn't try to do that. All right, so corporal punishment. Actually, in that day and age, in the 70s and the 80s, they actually still invited teachers and friends and family to also discipline their kids.
Now, I went to a Catholic school for 1 year, but I have to say I never got whacked by a ruler.
So the other punishment would be, and I used to know that people were punished with this. This didn't happen to me, though.
Yeah.
No supper.
Oh, yeah. Who does that?
Like, I guess some parents
You're like, you know what? This is the Middle Ages. We could use the extra food. Go to bed with no supper. Chew on the straw in your mattress if you want.
And you know what? That would be a really hard thing because if you were, no supper is essentially being banished because you had no television in the room.
You
there was no communication, nothing.
You're just sitting there like a lump.
And you could maybe read. But that's where the wild things, that book.
Where the wild things are.
Where the wild things are. That is what that is. They send
one
them to
of the
bed.
Great children's stories of all time, by the way. It's terrifying, which as all children's stories should be.
But I mean, okay, so that
so
was
I never
thing.
Had
no
that,
supper.
But I did witness the and stay at the table till you finish.
Oh, really?
Right? You're like, but I don't like it. It's like,
that's
wow.
Very Joan Crawford.
Oh, it is. It's like, and by the way, I saw you hanging your shit up on wire hangers. So I'm beating the fuck out of you.
But first I need to put my cold cream on my face.
That's right. Exactly. Let me make myself ultimately horrific by putting cold cream on my face, a towel around my head. And then I'm going to come over there and beat the fuck out of you with a wire, with a piece of wire.
The funniest thing is how Gen X of us is this to laugh at someone.
Oh yeah. We think that's hilarious. And like, I'm sure like millennials are like, oh my God, that's child abuse.
That's terrible.
What are you doing?
All right. So then the other thing, washing your mouth out with soap.
Never. No, wait. Might have happened once. I'm trying to think.
What?
I'm trying to think.
They put a soap in your mouth?
I'm trying to think. No, I think I'm just remembering
the Christmas story.
I feel like I conflate that sometimes with my own upbringing. Like, did my dad change a tire and I said the F word? I think somebody in my family, it wasn't like a bar of soap. It was like Palmolive. I mean,
Dish soap? They squirted dish soap?
Like just
breath?
A little bit like on your tongue or whatever.
Palmolive dish detergent?
I feel like maybe that
Madge,
happened.
Madge, though, with her hand.
Oh, I know. It's like, you're soaking in it. What? Madge, what the fuck are you doing?
But.
Did you have that happen?
No, because I swore like a sailor and my parents didn't do anything like it.
I was terrified to swear until I went to college.
I swore from the time I was really young child, and I can remember one time I had to have been like 10 or 11.
Yeah.
Probably, because I was still, I know this because I was living my, maybe I was like 11. We had my family over for dinner, my yeah. half-brothers and half-sisters.
Oh, the guy who was in...
Little River Band.
Who was in the Little River Band.
And so I'm sitting there, and I was playing with my, I was playing in a fort. Because I was an only.
Nice, yeah. So, you're like, so whatever, I'm making my own entertainment over here with sheets and pillows.
That's exactly what I would do, right? I was very
He's going to judge you for that.
And I'm sitting there and I'm playing and my dog came over and knocked my fort over.
Fucking dog.
And I yelled out, Mom, Dad, come and get the goddamn dog.
Wow.
And the rule was
yeah.
I couldn't swear in front of company.
Right.
But I forgot the rule.
Oops. You're not allowed to say goddamn.
My brothers, they were like,
whoa, come she's not getting her ass beat right now?
Did your parents do any weird disciplinary things? I know we've talked about parents who like catch their kids smoking. This used to be the thing.
Oh, yeah. It used to be like, if you catch the kid smoking, you're like, all right, you want to smoke? Come here, big guy.
Here's 10 packs of cigarettes.
Here's 10 packs of cigarettes, Camels, unfiltered, and you let them smoke until they throw up or whatever, right?
Up.
To discourage them from ever smoking again. My parents would hold, because it was the 70s, right? They would have cocktail parties with their friends.
Of course they would.
Because, I mean, first of all, that's one thing.
Was it a key party, Mark?
No. Well, maybe. I don't know. I was too young to know. I wasn't worried about the keys. I was more interested in like drinking out of everybody's drink when they left it on the coffee table.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, that's a thing I think we've lost. Like having a bunch of adults over to your house to just get fucked up, right?
Well, what about this though? When all those adults would come over to get fucked up and the kids, the toddlers were wandering around.
Yeah, they didn't
inevitably
care.
The parents would do this flex. They would pose children for pictures.
Yeah. Hold on.
Alcohol.
Give Mark that martini glass, right?
Yeah.
That's
and
hilarious.
Put a cigarette in Christina's mouth.
Yeah, exactly. So I've posted on my Twitter, in case you guys haven't seen, a picture of my brother with
smoking a pipe
with my grandmother's boyfriend at the time, who was a pipe smoker, giving Tom a pipe. But yeah, he was definitely like being groomed there to be a smoker.
Here's the last one I'm going to talk about. And I think this continues on to this very day because I believe that I've said this lie,
yeah.
Which is don't turn on any interior lights in the car at night because it's illegal.
Because you'll definitely get pulled over and shot by a cop, right? They're like, well, it ruins your night vision or whatever.
Well, it's
I have headlights.
Yeah,
I have headlights.
Yeah, but it is harder to see on.
But yeah, we were not allowed to touch the dome light.
No,
is
you
what
cannot
it's called.
Know the dome light, even if you wanted to read.
But yeah, you could not have any lights in the back. You were just sitting back there. And mostly I was just terrorizing my siblings. And then you play dumb car games, right? So, right, mm-hmm. Like, oh, you know, you try to find states of license plates and stuff.
Oh, hey, my name is Anna, and I come from Alabama with a car full of alabaster.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about sex.
I have a great sex ed story.
All right, so sex ed. But let's talk about what some of our respondents on Gen Extemporaneous Twitter were.
Our very good friend Anne Marie, who's a very famous author, said, I got a book about periods that was put out by Kotex, which, I mean, honestly, good job, Kotex.
I think I got that in health class.
Yeah.
I think I got that
same for sex,
one in health
class. Feel like I knew before, but I got sex ed in school. Not very comprehensive, probably, but that was it. So a lot of our listeners said this. Not a single solitary word from anybody about sex or becoming a woman. That's from Dynamouse 1000, who we love.
We love her.
So here's Kathy, who said, when I was very young and asked, I got the when a man loves a woman, he plants a seed in her and a baby grows talk. When I was older, I recall my mother trying to have the talk, but I didn't want to discuss. I was uncomfortable. 70s.
Okay.
Salty girl 18 says, I went to Catholic school. We got the talk from the nuns.
Oh,
wow.
That's ironic.
Why don't I just lecture you about particle physics? It was very awkward. Yeah, no shit. Oh, my mom was a nurse, so our talk was very specific with her textbooks.
Jim Palmer.
Yeah, Jen, who sent us the amazing Jim Palmer underwear poster, said, we had a book that explained different animal reproduction and moved up to humans. So that's literally birds and the bees right there, right? Dawn said, no talk. Parents left a book on the shelf. Wow. Next to my dad's Playboy magazines.
Wow.
That explained in very elementary terms how babies are made.
Oh, wow.
It was mostly Eric Carle type illustrations. Do you know who Eric Carle is?
I do.
That's
the
very hungry caterpillar guy.
Was it like the...
It's very like...
Like construction paper.
Yeah, it's like construction paper.
Yes, I had that same book.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure Anne-Marie could tell us about that because it's a picture book and she's an expert. Then mom attended special film at my fifth grade class to hear about puberty. Here's one from Teresa T2. My neighbor's six-year-old learned from her grandpa on her father's side.
Oh.
Didn't even skip the part that a penis goes into a vagina. Did I mention she was six? Well, grandpa was dropping the tea. I mean, he's spilling the tea there. He was dropping some truth bombs.
My God.
ScarJo. You know, our friend Joanne, who's on our other podcast.
Yep.
We have like seven podcasts.
Our co-host on Vampire Insider.
She's like, me. Mom, I have something to tell you. Mom, what did you do now? Me, I had sex for the first time. Mom, Jesus Christ, I don't want to hear this shit. She's like the youngest of six. She really stopped parenting me around the age seven. I think she was tired. Never had a sex talk other than that. Sandy... who is a little bit older than me, I think, said, I'm still waiting, maybe in the next life. Soul Searcher, Christmas Baby 71, says, no talk from my tight-lipped Irish-German mother. I asked where babies come from, and she said, you have to be married. True enough. Diane D. is still waiting for her talk. Min 111111, I'm still waiting for that talk. I'm 62. Just Danny Joe said, never got the talk. I'm the youngest of five girls. My mom raised me as a single parent. I think she was just exhausted. So this is a common theme.
That's pretty true.
That your mom's is just too tired to talk to you about sex. She's like, look, your dad pesters me enough about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to tell you about it.
Okay.
And I have told you this story.
Okay.
And you love this story. So the first exposure I got, they gave my brother Tom and I an LP, a vinyl record with a follow-along book of this, like, free-to-be, hippy-dippy, you know, little Muppets having sex type of, here's how sex works, right? And it's like, sometimes mommy and daddy lie down, even in the middle of the day. I remember that. Like, I'm like, in the middle of the day?
Sex.
And I'm sitting here next to my little brother following along in the book that comes with the LP. I'm like, this is so bad. I don't like this at all. I know. It's like, boop, turn the page. I'm like, oh, fuck, what's on this page? What are we going to talk about now? Vulvas? So that was my first exposure. And I was probably, I don't know, like 7 or 8 at that point.
Wow. Mine was, my mother couldn't talk to me about it at all.
Oh, no. Dad had to do it?
No. My sister, my dad's daughter. My dad.
Okay. So she, how old was she? How much older?
She was, oh, let's see.
35.
She was much older than I was. She was in her late 20s, early 30s.
Oh, okay. So she definitely knew what was up.
She knew what was up, but, and she was cool, but she, you know, she gave me the talk, and I always resented the fact that my mother couldn't pull it together enough to give me the talk.
Mom, come on.
And as a result, my relationship with my mother around all of it was very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, I could never be honest with my mom about talking about periods or talking about whatever.
Yeah, because she didn't step up when
because
the time
she
came.
She was uncomfortable about it, and I knew that she was. It was, it was a really spotty sex ed, but I figured it out.
Yeah.
You know, eventually.
Of course.
And, I mean, it was a very sexual time. I don't know if you had that same experience, but definitely I did. It was the sexual revolution.
I did not. I missed that somehow.
At once it was the sexual revolution. So sex was everywhere. Sex on television. It was like very sexy time. I remember there being, you know, not as sexy, not as overt as it is today, but I can remember it being quite sexy and you know, like double entendres. And I mean, like even something like MASH. I can remember watching Alan Alda and being like, ooh, I feel things. One of our last Twitter response about this was phenomenal.
Yeah. So sadly, her mother died when she was 10.
Yeah.
So we were left with my dad. His lesson, sit us in front of the TV and put on Debbie Does Dallas. I mean, No lie. That's what she said. So I was like, I have questions. So I'm like, had you ever seen anything like that before? She's like, oh, no. It was beyond awkward, and I never looked at birthday candles the same after that. I don't know what's going on.
But I love her sense of humor. Yeah. That, to me, is a very Gen X response. It's like, it is, actually. You know what? I've never looked at it the same again. And that's what you did, right? Like, you just internalize these things, become cynical as fuck.
Yeah.
And find the laugh. Right? Like, and find the thing that's funny about it.
Are you having a laugh?
I'm having a laugh. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to wrap up here, and we're going to make this into two episodes, Mark, because we have plenty of material for
this. My growing up is a very enriching and varied tapestry. So everybody's going to want to hear all about that.
What we're going to do is invite you all to join us on social media. I have a Twitter at...
Just one?
Well, just the one. At Christina Gen X.
Right.
Is my...
Do I have one?
My Twitter. Mark is at Mark Eats Peach. And we have a podcast Twitter at Extemporaneous 2. We also have a Facebook group at Gen Extemporaneous. We also have the Patreon.
That's right. So it's www.patreon.com/GenExtemporaneous.
That's right.
And that's where we put the good stuff, right? That's where internet archaeology goes,
Video Thunderdome,
and also extended conversations about topics we've addressed on our free podcast.
That's right. So thank you very much for coming and listening to us each week. We really appreciate it. If you like us, please share us with a friend. Bye.
Peace out, Weeblos, which is where I topped out in the Boy Scout structure.